Welcome, everyone, to the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is data power integration with multi-instance MQ-Q managers. The presenters are Chin Shahu and Ro Nandu. Chin is an advisory software engineer and works in data power appliance and API management product support for more than 5 years. He collaborates with the SQA team to review test cases and develops test plans for product integration issues with MQ, JMS, WMB. He also participates in IBM-sponsored data power forums and social media. He is the pod lead in MQ component that involves data power integration issues with MQ, JMS, WSRR, and B2B. Ro is an IBM software engineer currently working in data power and API management product defect team. Over the last 10 years, he has been focusing on problem-solving services in the area of multi-protocol integrations involving a number of IBM products like WMB, IIB, WAS, MQ, WSRR, and Data Power. He co-authored multiple IBM Redbook publications, including the recent Integration Throughout and Beyond the Enterprise book. He is a regular blogger and a seasoned WSDI speaker. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Ro.
Thank you, Kathy. Can we go to the slide number 2 for agenda? Okay, today we will be covering the topics that includes the MQ multi-instance queue managers, how it can they can be integrated into the data power, with an introduction of the multi-instance, how one can set up the multi-instances queue managers on the MQ side, and what are the best practices and how best we can configure this and troubleshooting aspects. Can we go to the slide number 3, please? Here, the key features of the multi-instance queue managers when compared to the simple queue manager, simple queue managers or the clusters. The multi-instance queue managers presents a supports basic active and standby failover mechanism. And this is an alternative to the existing commercially available HA softwares. That's why it, since this is going to be, this is a part of the existing and product that comes with the product, This feature has become a more attractive feature among the MQ and the associated software products, product users. As for this feature, a single copy of the data stored on a shared network file system, there are some important features that are required for the network file system here, and which I'm going to discuss in a later slide. And the multi-instances of queue managers can be created on different servers with a single active instance to access the data, and remaining queue managers are in a standby state. One can have a multiple, more than one standby server can be created on more than one MQ servers. That's why if one of the MQ server fails, it can be configured to fail over to more than one MQ servers. If we can go to the slide number 4, then it I showed here a simple how MQ of multi-instances work. For example, here when a queue manager 1 on a machine A and a queue manager 2 on machine B are installed, then and data power as a client connects to the active one of the active Q queue managers. The active queue manager, in turn, gets the data and the logs of the queue manager, which are located in a remote file system, like NFS file system or Windows CIFS or the network file system. What I mean is GPFS or a SAN or a NAS, kind of any of these network file systems. And the queue manager too will be in a standby state. So as you can see, the client will be connected only to the active queue manager, while there is no the connection between the data power and the standby queue manager is not active. If you can go to the slide number 5, it shows how exactly the failover scenario works. In this slide, for example, if the machine A by any chance failed and it's no longer available, in that scenario, the first thing is the connection between the machine A and the network file system will fail. And hence, the connection between the client, the data power, and the machine A queue manager 1 also will get broke. Then what will happen is the standby queue manager on machine B will be picked up and have an active connection to the queue manager data and logs on the network file system. And once it gets activated, become active, the data power, the client will be connected to the standby node in the cluster. We go to the next slide. In the slide number 6, I have mentioned some of the requirements for implementing the multi-instances. The first and basic fundamental requirement is the MQ should be at the server installation should be at the minimum of 701, from where this feature has been added and that's the reason why it should be at that level. The best thing is to have a latest version of the MQ install. And the second requirement would be the user ID and group IDs of the MQM user must be same in all operating systems or machines involved. If they are Unix operating systems, and the third is very important and critical in this implementation is the shared network file system. It should provide data write integrity and guaranteed the exclusive access to the files and release locks on failure. These three features are tested and has been implemented at NFS version 4 onwards. So the minimum level of a network file system NFS should be version 4. Or the NAS and SAN or GPFS are already have been tested, and a number of other file systems that are supported for this implementation is documented in a DCF tech note that I have given in the references. If you want to see if any of the other file systems, if you want to implement, you can check if they have been tested and supported in that document. In the slide number 7, here I have given how some of the commands that one can use to test if the network file system is ready for doing implementation. The first one is the command, even the command for all these three, checking all these three features is the same, AMQM FSCK. If you use that command without any flags, with W flag, it checks the basic POSIX file locking behavior. And if it's flag C, it checks to see if the two machines at once ensure that the locks are handed off correctly when the process ends. And these commands have to be tested on both the servers before implementation. And in the slide 8, I've given some commands here for setting up the multi-instance queue managers. The first CRT MQM command with minus MD and minus LD flags, giving the directories for the data and the logs, the command helps to create a queue manager on machine A. And to add, slide number 8, please. Define the queue manager on the machine B. You can add an instance of backup or a standby instance. You can add on machine B using add MQ in INF command. You can start the active instance using STR MQM minus X flag. And once an active instance of the queue manager started on machine A, and you use the same command on machine B, it starts as a standby. Can you please go to slide number 9, please? Here, I have given some of the outputs after creating the queue managers on both the active and the standby nodes. You can display the instances using DSPMQ minus X and minus O flags. And you can see the active, the machine A is an active node and machine B will be a standby node. And similarly, if one displays DSPMQ with minus X and minus four flags, then you can see in the machine B, it will be in a standby mode. If a third machine is configured, but if it is not started, execute the command DSPMQ, then we don't see an instance in the list, but in the status you can see it is done running elsewhere status. If we go to slide number 10, here, failover scenarios of the queue managers has been shown here. If we top an active instance on machine A using command endmqm with minus I flag, then it would be failed over automatically to the standby instance. And if you want to stop just a standby instance, you can use end EMQM minus X on a standby node. And to switch over the active to standby, you have to use end MQM command with minus I flag, IS flag. Once, as I said, the active instance has been ended, the standby instance will try to become active. The next slide, I have incorporated the slide in slide number 11 to show that the same implementation can be done even in MQ clusters. As we all know, that the MQ cluster is a way to logically grouping WebSphere queue managers so that we can reduce the system administration due to fewer number of channels and remote queues and transmission queues, whatnot. And also it helps besides the high availability, and it also helps for workload balancing. So in this scenario, while implementing the multi-instance in the cluster scenarios, usually the multi-instances will be advised to implement as a partial repository. and how one can implement this. There is a VSTI that describes very clearly all the steps involved, and that has been included in the references for your perusal. The next slide, that's slide number 12, how the MQ failover mechanism works for data power chin will handle.
Okay, so thank you, Rao, and for your in-depth presentation on the multi-instance queue manager side. So I'll be talking more of the data power side. So here we have data power, where the data power provides the failover mechanism between the client and server. In this case, data power being the client and the MQ server as the server, how the mechanism works, I'll try to give you a little background here. As you all know, the data power has a object called MQQM object, called MQQ manager object, which is used to connect from data power to the MQ server. But MQQM object along with the MQQM group together, they provide the failover mechanism. So the MQQM object gives you the basic connection with the retry logic involved to connect to the backend queue manager. However, the MQQM object, which is called MQQM group object, the MQQM group object provides the failover mechanism, where if one particular QM object, MQQM object fails, how the other, the backup queue managers will become the active queue manager or primary queue manager and provide that failover. So this is, I think, what we are just saying, that first you have to configure the MQQM object, and then you can have multiple MQQM objects. One of them will be the primary. The others will act as backup queue manager, or we can call that a standby queue manager. But in data per term, we call that as backup. Now, the once you configure, I'm going to talk a little bit more on this, but I just wanted to give you few ideas how the MQ objects work. So, as I said, it provides the basic connection retry logic. It also provides the connection pool and the idle timeout, and then the MQQM object participate in the MQQM group to provide the failover mechanism. So slide number 13, please. Here, just as I mentioned, that the MQQM group object implements the failover capabilities. Within this MQ group, you have a primary queue manager object, and you have one or more than one backup queue manager object. When the primary object is not available, then the MQ group will try to use one of the backup queue manager to become the primary queue manager to process the traffic. So that's what I think the MQ group provides the failover. And I'll probably give you some more examples of how the MQ group is configured. So, but this is the idea behind when we talk about data power failover mechanism with the backend queue manager. That's what I think the MQQM object works with MQQM group object. Together, they provide the failover mechanism for the backend. So go to the slide number 14, please. And, you know, here also we describe a little bit more in detail that if you have a list of backup queue manager object, if the first one, it selects the first one to be the primary in the case of primary is not available, if that selection, the MQQM object operational state is not up, for some reason it is not connected, then it will select the next one and try to test if the operational state is up or not. So gradually it will select in sequence and finally max the one whose operational state is available. Therefore, that backup queue manager becomes the primary queue manager to provide the failover. Once the original primary NQ object comes back, then there is a switch, you know, that the original queue manager object or NQQM object will be used immediately. So the idea is that the primary was the first one that used. If the primary goes down, then it takes one of the backup queue managers. Then if the backup queue manager is being used at the time when the primary comes back, then it will switch back to the primary. That is where the product is designed to provide the failover. Slide number 15, please. Now I'm going to talk about how we are going to integrate the multi-instance queue manager with the data power service and its associated objects. Slide number 16, please. Here, I just wanted to give you one sample of the configuration. You know, as you all know, that the NQQM objects and NQQM group objects and all those are used in conjunction with a service, what we call the multi-protocol service, or it can be a web service proxy. But here I am presenting you the multi-protocol gateway service, and specifically I am giving an example of the datagram traffic, which means that the traffic goes from the developer side and put that into the back-end side, and there is no reply back. So that is what we consider the datagram traffic. So within that service, you will have to create some policy, rules, and multi-steps. And also you can create the front-side handler such as NQ or NQFTE, some front-side handler, because those are probably will be used to get the message. Then you will also create the NQQM object, which will be used for the front-side handler in the NQ or NQFTE, and also NQQM group object, which will use this NQQM object within the group object. And then lastly, you'll also consider to create the backside NQ or NQFT URL to send the message to the backend. So these configurations are giving you the ability to connect the multi-instance key manager. That's what I'm going to show you next step. Slide number 17, please. This is the multi-protocol gateway service. As you see, that we created a multi-protocol gateway service where you have the policy, you know, that I can show you. This is the high level, and you have the policy, and you have the front-side handler and back-end URL, where all these, all these objects are using the multi-instance key manager object. So here we are talking about the multi-instance group, which is the NQQM group. That's what allows you to give the failover. So this is just a high overview of the multi-protocol gateway service. If you go to slide number 18, there are some additional configurations. So when you are using the NQ for the backend, you will need to use the propagate URI as off, because for NQ there is no URI which needs to be propagated, so it has to be off. And then on the second slide, number 19, there is another feature that, go to the slide number 19, please. Because you are using only request side of the message, no reply side, then we'll use the process backend errors to be off. By default, that value is on, but you to make it to be off, and this is visible in the advanced tab of the multi-protocol gateway service. So once this is done, then I'm going to come back to the front-side handler. So go to the slide number 20. Okay, so this is the policy, the style policy that we have configured here. this says client to server means it will go from the client side to the server. There is no other rules, just a request rule. So you have a match action which will give you the matching action of the URL, and then you have a transform action and a result action. That those are basically supported to process your message. So the transform action can be, you know, you can inject certain headers and manipulate the payload whatever way you want to, and then the result action basically sending back to the server, to the back-end service. So go to the slide number 21. Here we are talking about the MQ front-side handler. As you see in the queue manager field, we are using, you know, you can use a queue manager object or queue manager group object. So I'm going to show you the multi-instance group, which is a queue manager group object that is being used. So that way it will take the primary MQ object to process the traffic. Once the primary goes down, then it will take the backup, one of the backups, and then process the message. So there is no interruption in processing the message as soon as, you know, the backend fails for some reason. So this is the MQ front side handler configuration where we just simply use the MQ queue group. So go to the slide number 22. This is the MQ FTE. In the same way, in the MQ queue manager side, you can select, you know, the group or the queue manager object, but in this case we are in the group because we want to get that failover capability. And the others are there. I just wanted to give you for MQFTE, you know, the get option is this because it has to process the logical messages in order. So basically if you are using MQFTE, if you have the segmented message in the back end, then this particular handler will bring all the messages and will assemble it. And when you send it to backend, it will send that as a one single message. So you have the choice of whether you want to use the message one by one, or you want to use group message to assemble in data part to make as one. So that's why I gave you both MQ and MQFTE front side handler. Go to slide number 23. This is the MQ object. There are few tabs. I'll go through this. So this is basically the MQQM object, which gives you the basic configuration for providing the connectivity. So you provide the host name with the port number, the key manager name, the channel name, the user name, and also the XML manager. And the key factor here is the cache timeout. And most, I think the default value is empty, which is kept for backward compatibility. That is not good in the sense because if you use the default value as empty, then the connections are never closed. So that will cause problem for you when you do not have any request coming, but the data per side connection is open for long. At the same time, the queue manager side connection is gone. So then when the request comes in the time, when this condition is there, then you will see that connection is stalled. So you will get an error 2009 because that connection is broken. There is no connection. So that's the reason that we want to use a cache timeout. But the best practice for cache timeout is to always use a value in seconds, which is less than the keep alive timeout. But as an example, I gave this 60 seconds. If you do not know the keep alive timeout of the queue manager, you can always use 60 seconds or higher. But the rule of the thumb is that you should use always the value less than the keep alive timeout, because clients should always use the. Go to the slide number 23. This is where I'm just giving you the connection tab. In the connection tab, you establish how many connections that manager object will use. That basically defines the connection pool. The default value is 250. It's not always required that it use the 250. And that value, you may need to, you know, test it out and see what is, you know, value that your service will need based on some testing. And because it provides you the connection pool, if you have more connection, DataPower will use it. So that is what I think sometimes it may cause problem in the back end, because back end, if the back end is supporting many clients, it may not, you know, hold that kind of load. So you need to make sure what type of connection size is, you know, for your workload. And then the retry behavior, this is the key part of the configuration. We have the four parameters here: retry interval, retry attempt, long retry interval, and reporting interval. The retry interval and retry attempts, they work together. But the default value is zero. The retry attempt default value is zero, and the retry interval is 1 second. Those are not very good default value, because sometimes the zero means it will retry forever. But we don't want to use the NQQM object to retry forever with 1 second interval. That is why you have to configure this to a value which is something reasonable. But for the multi-instance queue manager, I have used this value with a 10-second retry interval with 6 retry attempts. Then it will probably basically use 1 minute, 10 times 6 is 60 seconds, 1 minute. After that, it will fall back to the long retry interval, which is 15 seconds. Then it will keep on continuing with that 15-second interval until a connection is established. The reporting interval is that how often you want to report in the system log. I use a value of 600 seconds, which is 10 minutes. The reason I will explain to you later, because in the multi-instance queue manager side, you have two queue manager objects. One is active, the other one is standby. But in the standby mode, there is no really queue manager listener. The queue manager is only waiting to become active in the case of multi-instance queue manager goes down. So that's but because DataPower has to establish the two objects, that's why you will see that there are some errors in the system log. But by using this reporting interval, you will make it such those errors as manageable. And here is the SSL configuration. You can provide the SSL connection to the backend queue manager using the SSL proxy profile or the key repository. There are two ways, and we have some tech notes where it describes how to do it. But in our test, we did not do that, but it can be done. Okay, so go to the slide number 25, please. This is where we are talking about the MQQM group. This is a very simple configuration. You have the primary queue manager, but you have to create these MQQM objects first. Then only you can select the objects here. So you have to create at least two, one for primary, the other one is for backup. But you can have multiple backups as well, but only it will work with one single primary. So once you define the primary queue manager object, then you list out the, you know, you just add those backup queue managers and then you save the config. That's all. Now remember that when we are configuring the MQ front side handler, we are using this multi-instance.grp object, which is using this group, not the queue manager object. So that is showing that it has got two objects, MQ object, which is called the MIDP-QM1, MIDP-QM2. So that is where the group is defined. go to the slide number 26. These are some of the examples of the backend MQ URL. Remember that in the multi-protocol gateway service, we had a backend service we provide. So you can use a syntax like this for your backend. So if you are using MQFTE URL, you can use this DPMQFTE syntax with the name of the MQ group, with the request queue name, and the other fields are required because the MQFTE has to have the agent name, the destination queue manager name, and the file name. And, you know, then the transactional equal to true if you are using units of work in your MQKM object. If you don't use, then you don't have to use transaction equal to true. So that's why I gave you two examples where it has the transactional tag and without the transactional tag. Same way the MQ URL is there. If you notice that it is using the multi-instance group, not the key manager object, but then you provide the queue, the request queue, with the transactional equal to true if units of work is used, otherwise you don't use that one. So this is just some examples of the MQ URL opener syntax that for you to see and how you can use it. Go to slide number 27. Okay, so now I'm going to talk a little bit of the best practice for the configuration regarding MQQM object and the multi-instance queue managers. Slide number 28. In the MQQM configuration, I would like to mention that always use a valid cache timeout. As I mentioned earlier, the default value is empty, doesn't close the connection, and this causes stale connection. Therefore, you must use a valid cache timeout. Valid in the sense, if you do not know the keep your life timeout, use 60 seconds. That is what I think some of the customers are using. And, you know, the idea of this value, the cache timeout, is like client-side idle timeout. When a connection is not being used, it will be closed gracefully after the expiry of the timeout, and will be back to the pool. So that therefore, when a new connection is required, it will not be back to the pool, it will be closed. So when a new connection is required, it will create a new one. So if you have a traffic pattern where you have, traffic coming only in a burst, like, you know, say some messages will come, then it will wait for 20-30 minutes, and then come some more messages after that. So this type of traffic pattern, it may be easier to use smaller value. But if you have, you know, regular messages coming and interval regularly, then you may use a long cache timeout interval. But again, the value has to be less than the keep alive time of the queue manager. That is the rule. But I'm just saying that if you don't know that, you may use a 60 second to start with. Use smaller retry interval and long retry interval values for the MQ failover to work faster, because this retry logic allows you to connect to the backend when the backend is not available. So if you have smaller value, so those retries will work faster, therefore it will try to connect to the backend quicker. So that is what we suggest, that for failover scenario, use smaller value. And the retry attempt value needs to be a single digit, because you don't want to retry for many times, because that will take time. So that is what we suggest, that it has to be single digit. As in my example, I use 6, you can use 5 or 4, but it all needs to be tested out. Then slide number 29. We are talking about here in the data power side, data power uses an active mode to connect MQKM object. So it is always, so if you have primary or a backup queue manager, they are assumed to be active. But the multi-instance queue manager don't provide you the active. It provides you active standby. Therefore, even though you are configuring in developer side, one being active, the other one you are assuming that is active because there is no active standby in data power. So it will be active, but it will create some errors. It will create errors because it cannot connect to the standby key manager. Therefore, we suggested that the reporting interval, if you make it a little bigger, like a higher value, you will see less number of errors, even though these errors are visible. But still, you'll be able to manage it. But in the event the primary queue manager goes down, then one of the backup queue manager will become the primary as soon as it provides the connectivity. So the retry logic will play a role there. That is why we suggest that some of the values which we reported here, or at least you can test with a smaller number of retry interval and the retry attempt. As I said, that there are critical MQ errors. They will be displayed, like your connection failure or some of the 2059 errors where it says backend queue manager is not available. Those things will be visible. But besides those two, there may be other errors which you don't want to see quite often, because you know that the standby queue manager is not going to give you the connection immediately. So that's the reason that we suggest to use some of these features. Go to slide number 30. This is some of the best practice for the multi-instance queue manager side. The first thing is that you do not want to mix up the NFS server and the queue manager running on the same box. You need to separate, you know, all your NQ queue manager nodes and the NFS server, which provides the shared file system to hold the repository, the NQ repository for the multi-instance. So if the NFS server is active, if any one of the queue manager goes down, other queue managers can become active. Therefore, you don't want to mix up your NFS server running on the same box where one of the queue managers is running as active or standby. So you need to make sure the NFS server is running in a separate box. Other boxes are accessing the NFS server being the client. Therefore, they will be able to access the repository in the NFS server. And configure a listener as a queue manager service so that the listener will start automatically as part of queue manager startup. That will help because you don't want to go and manually start the listener port. Once the queue manager comes up, the listener port will start by the queue manager. In the cluster environment, have two full repository while avoiding a multi-instance queue manager as full repository. So that, I think Ra has mentioned that the full repository, two separate full repository will be important so that if one goes down, the other one will become as a repository for the cluster environment. Switching over to a standby instance can take anywhere from seconds to minutes, depending on the configuration, because sometimes, you know, the NFS lock release takes sometimes, you know, few seconds or, you know, even so those things you probably have to test it out, how much time the NFS lock is taking to release so that the other queue manager, the standby queue manager, can access the lock and then able to access the repository. So those things you need to make sure that those are lower, you know, those can be tuned. And also the other factor is that don't try to mix and match operating systems, like don't use Unix and the Windows or, you know, this type of environment or operating system when you are configuring the multi-instance key managers. Okay, so go to the slide number 31. Now we are going to talk a little bit of the troubleshooting. For data per side, we have to use some of the troubleshooting tips. As you know that log label being in the test scenario, you are going to use log label as error. Okay, sometimes you may need to use the log label as a debug so that all the transaction steps are visible to see if that will give you any clue in terms of your debugging purposes. So this can be done through your data per device. I'll show you that in the next slide. There is also probe is available in DataPower. You can enable the probe for a particular service to see if the transactions are coming through the service and each steps are processing and what the results are, the input, output, and all those results you can see in the probe. And then there is also the provision of packet capture. If you have M2 connection errors, because connections are happening at a TCP level, sometimes the log level, which are at the application layer, may not help you. So that time you probably have to use the packet capture data or packet capture facility available in DataPower to get those packets and then analyze to see how the connection, which side of the connection is being closed. If DataPower is closing or queue manager side is closing or the network is closing, so these are some things that you have to analyze and, you know, understand the connection issues. Then we have the custom log target. Sometimes if you are working in a multi-user environment and a particular domain being used by many developers, you may use a custom log target for your service so that you can collect the debug-level logs or specific events. That way, it will be easier for you to analyze and also to see what errors are giving you the problem. If you encounter the region code 2009, which is connection broken, or 2059, which is the MQQ manager not available, you may have to check, you know, if your backend is available, if there is connectivity, you know, between the outside client and the server. So you may test those things or make sure, or even with those kind of conditions, you probably have to collect the packet capture data from the data per side to investigate further. MQ traces will be necessary sometimes. You know, we work with MQ support team so that they can analyze the MQ traces to see what API calls are being made between DataPower and the MQ server, then they will be able to see where the problem lies, or at least they can pinpoint the source of the problem to investigate further. Okay, slide number 32, please. Now, as I mentioned about the debugging log, you know, in the web GUI, you can go to the main, you know, troubleshooting panel. And from that, once you click it, you'll see that the main tab, debug probe, and conformance validation. From the main tab, you'll see that there is a logging part there. So you can select from that log label. Default may be error, but you can select the log label to debug, and then you apply so that the log label set as debug. And once you finish your testing, then you can change back to error, but that is where you can enable. The same way that, you know, in the same troubleshooting panel, there is a debug probe. You can enable probe by selecting the particular service and enable it. But if you don't want to, you know, once your test is complete, you don't want to run the probe for all the time. It's better to disable it so you can come to the same icon, troubleshooting icon, and debug probe, and then disable it. Therefore, your probe is disabled. Go to the slide number 33. Here you are talking about the packet capture scenario. You know, in this is only available in the default domain. So if you have access to the default domain, you can go to the packet capture and select all interfaces. The reason we say select all interfaces because in DataPAR you have multiple interfaces. Sometimes the routing is not properly configured or maybe multiple default routes may be there. Therefore, we suggest to use all interfaces and mode is continuous, and then you use a filter so that the number of packets collection will be not huge. You can use these filters very effectively. Therefore, that the collection will be smaller so that you are only collecting for that particular port number or the host IP or combination of host and IP. And once you finish your packet capture, you can stop it the same way. You can say all, select the interface type, all interface, and stop the packet capture. The packet capture file will be located in the temporary directory of the default domain, and you can download those packet capture to your local machine and then use the WireSerc or some other tool which can analyze these packets, and then you determine why these, you know, there are connection problems and who is closing those connections. And sometimes it may be difficult to use analyze the SSL encrypted packets. If you have the option to use a null cipher, you can use a null cipher and then the packets will not be encrypted, or you have to decrypt using some method for the SSL packets. Go to the slide number 34. Here is the custom log target. This is basically is a feature available for each domain. So in the application domain, log target, you can add a log target, and then from the main tab, you define these are some of the features which we are available as default. So we want to make sure that don't use feedback detection as on. It should be always off, because that will take more resources. And then identical event detection also off. Then you provide the file name and this log size. The default is 500. You can also increase if you are doing a lot of testing. You may increase a little more, 500K, but you can say 5 meg, 10 meg, depending on how much log you want to collect. And the rotation is there for 3. You can also increase that from 3 to 4 or 5, again, depending on how many logs that you want to collect. Then go to the slide number 35. Here we have this event subscription, which is very important. That is where you define what particular events you want to collect data. So we suggest that the 3 events, which is called management, MQ, and network. These are the 3 events which will capture the network specific, the management specific, in the sense that any kind of objects going down up, that kind of events, and the MQ specific object like MQQM object or MQQM group object or MQ front side handler or those kind of objects, they will be their log will be captured in this MQ category, event category. So these are only 3 things. If you take, then you will be able to get some of the MQ specific problem to analyze it based on the custom log target. Go to the slide number 36. Here we are just talking about some of the references. We are giving you the support portal where we have some of the information on Info Center. You can look some of the information that is available through the support portal. You can also contact the DataPAR forum, and we have the Facebook also, and we have also a new forum. It's called DW Answers. There are also a lot of, our DataPAR SME experts. They provide question and answer to specific problem. So these are some of these examples that links that you can see and see whether that will help you. Okay, go to slide number 37. In the summary, as we said that multi-instance queue managers configurations are presented. In this presentation, we mentioned that the network attached storage such as NFS or CIFS or GPFS, those are some of the network attached storage are necessary and those which support the leaf-based locking and should be POSIX compliant. So that is what the requirement for the multi-instance queue managers and also network file system in Unix or the CI, the common internet file system in Windows can be used to install or auto-configure the multi-instance queue managers. DataPath provides the failover capability using MQQM group and MQQM objects, and these are to be configured, and the retry parameters of the MQQM object need special consideration when using with multi-instance queue manager. As I mentioned there, we have to consider those retry parameters, those four retry parameters in the MQQM object to make sure that the failover happens quicker for the multi-instance queue manager. Go to the slide number 38. Now, I think I am going to hand over to here are some of the references. I think we mentioned, Rao mentioned, you can take a look at and see if these things will help you in terms of configuring your environment. And if you have any further questions, you can always reach us through email, through forums, and through PMRs. Now I'm going to hand over to Kathy, so she's going to continue with some additional information.
Thank you, Chen and Ro, for a great presentation. I don't see any questions in the web conference. So at this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. Thank you very much for joining us today, and thank you, Chen and Ro, for a great presentation. Have a great day, everybody.